coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Welcome back to Worth Doing Badly, our weekly survey of the Bible lessons for each Sunday of the church year. We're making our way through the season of Epiphany according to Series C of the three-year series lectionary. And today, we are going to survey the lessons for the fifth Sunday after the Epiphany. And they are Isaiah 6 verses 1 to 8, Psalm 138, 1 Corinthians 14 verse 12b to 20, and Luke 5 verses 1 to 11. We begin with David Weber, followed by comments and questions from Ethan Stoppenhagen.
The catch of fish sounds like a good fish story. The biggest liars in the world are fishermen, talking about this, you know, all the fish that they have caught. But in this case, the catch of fish is something that reveals the truth about God. So paying close attention to this, Luke records that Peter saw it. What he saw was that Jesus told them to do something absurd, to fish at the wrong time of day, and to do it all wrong, and everything good came as a result of that. And then Luke does an interpretation. What Peter saw was not a catch of fish. What Peter saw was that the Creator had become part of his creation, and that this led to the recognition that Peter was a sinner and that he could not stand being in the presence of the holy. Well, you don't see that in the description, but this is Luke's interpretation. And Peter, with that recognition, once he realized that the Creator had become part of his creation, he said, depart, for I am sinful. Depart. Which was the exact opposite of what he should have gotten. The point of Christ's incarnation is not that God depart, but that God live among us, Emmanuel. And so Peter could recognize the truth, but he couldn't appreciate it. He could recognize that what we really need is the Creator to return to his creation and to save us. But when it happened, Peter said, didn't want any part of it. Depart is the antithesis of the incarnation. And it reflects this, what I think it reflects is a misunderstanding of what God's glory is and what God's glory is meant to do. And as we say over and over again, the relationship between us recognizing, confessing our sin and needing mercy, and the movement towards the Gloria is repeated in the liturgy with our singing of the Kyrie. And then almost immediately, not enough time goes in, but immediately singing the Gloria. But it does ritualize the sense of which once we become recognized, once we recognize that we are truly sinners, you would say that this is so destructive and understanding. But the fact is that Peter recognizes that he is full of holes and that the holy is not something he wants any part of, and that is the wrong message. Now, Ethan, have you ever read Rudolf Otto?
Yep, The Idea of the Holy.
Yes, The Idea of the Holy. Now, Rudolf Otto shows us how Lutheranism can have such a remarkable power to it. And oddly enough, in seminary, this book was criticized, rejected, rather than gone deeply into, because somehow Rudolf Otto just wasn't up to snuff. He wasn't the right kind of Lutheran or something. I don't know. Here's what happened. The idea of the numinous encounter, that there's a reality that we confess in the creed of that God is seen and unseen. Well, this is, Rudolf Otto took that seriously, and he said, what is this unseen? And he said, it is the numinous. The unseen world is the world where we don't get comforted. We are uncomfortable. And because it is uncomforting, if that's even a word, right? And It's the fact is that we who are so used to living in the seen world, once we are introduced to the unseen world, all of our lives we are saying the unseen world is unreal, right? Reality is material. Reality is the things that you can weigh and test and sell and buy and all that. But when, you know, it's God's intention to show us the real world, which is the world of the seen and the unseen. It's the world of spirit and of flesh. It's the world of the visible and invisible. And ultimately, it's the world of the mortal desiring immortality. So what the passage is saying is that the material world makes no sense unless we first see that the world was caused by the Word, the immaterial world, and it's moving towards the dissolution of the material in eternity. Now, so Peter says, once he's introduced to the real world, the world that's becoming, he says, I have no part in this. I want this to depart. And Jesus just slowly begins to work at that wrong conclusion and saying, you know, I'm here, and that's the thing which is true. And when it's all said and done, it says that they were astonished. That first of all, I think Peter spoke for all the disciples. They wanted Jesus to disappear. And when Jesus refused to disappear, then they were astonished at what is going on with this whole incarnation. Reading Augustine's Confessions, there is a beautiful hidden gem in the fact that when Augustine's talking about his confessions, he's talking about two kinds of confessions. The confession of sin, which Peter recognizes, and Augustine works out over, you know, six or seven books. What does it mean to recognize yourself as a sinner? And it is some hard going. So you confess your sin, you confess your unworthiness, you confess the fact that you can't keep yourself alive. And that gives way to the second confession of faith, which is saying, yes, that's all true, but there's a better truth. And again, back to Otto, he called these two kinds of confession, right? That when we're in the presence of God, we're in the presence of the mysterium tremendum et fascinans. How beautiful could that be? We're in the presence. The presence of God is a mystery. Beautiful, right? That mystery causes fear and trembling, tremendum. That's a Kierkegaard develops it. That if when we're in the presence of God, that there isn't a fearful response, then we're not really getting that presence. But it's followed by this idea of fascination, that we are first repulsed by God and then drawn to them, or as the disciples, they were amazed by this, and that God wants us to be near him, and it's not going to happen because we are driven that way. We're not forced by the law, but that the beauty of Christ, the beauty of the crucifixion draws us to this. And it's a fearful reality only because we recognize that it is possible to be separated from God's love, and that would be death itself. So Otto tries to capture this, that the tremendum is this awe-inspiring encounter that leaves us speechless. Now that's makes it hard for the preaching task, that the truth we're trying to get at leaves us speechless. So how do you talk about that which goes beyond words? Any ideas?
Preachers and the church in general really struggle with how to talk about the miracles of Jesus and what they are there to accomplish. And I think this hits it on the nose, that when Jesus performs a miracle, it's not to, it's not to finally convince you to believe in him. It's finally to convince you of who he actually is and who you are in light of that. So Simon Peter's response to get away from me is I think what we should all be feeling and experiencing when we encounter a miracle like you said, sort of this the presence of the holy. But then how does the speechless part figure in?
That's what you get from Isaiah, and I'll give it to you. Isaiah says, woe is me. In the Hebrew, it's, or the Aramaic, whatever it is, hoyeve. I love that. Hearing Isaiah saying, woe is me, hoyeve. I am a man of unclean lips, living among people of unclean lips, right? And the idea that he says, my words are rubbish, right? Mm. I thought I was speaking the truth, but even my best attempt is unclean. And this is Isaiah, you know, one of the greatest poets in all of the biblical history, and not only that, but he's a statesman and a historian and all these things, and he's saying everything I have produced is rubbish. Now you find, you know, Thomas Aquinas wanted all of his works burned, and Luther said the same thing, that everything that he had written is rubbish, right? So at our best, even the best at their best recognizes that they're doing it badly. Again, what a great idea for a podcast.
So then, is the preacher's task then to prepare his hearers for the silence?
For the epiphany, whatever the epiphany is.
Okay.
Right? It's the assurance you will have an epiphany, and that epiphany will be a terrible thing, but it will also be a beautiful thing. Right?
Gotcha.
Now, our view of why God is attractive is just, you know, God, you know, I get this idea that God is, that people think God is attractive because he's just like us. That would be horrible. Right? This is why all this stuff in the church about, oh, I just want a place where I can be comfortable. Well, that's not what this is about. It was very, very uncomfortable for everyone in the presence, right? And it was so uncomfortable, Jesus had to say, don't be afraid, because the fear is not the point. The fear is necessary. The fear is a stage. The fear is not the point. The point is that you will now be, you will extend the incarnation by going to catch men, right? Using the metaphor of the fishing, that here you were impressed by the incarnation, that the Creator had become part of creation, that you will be, your message, which is unfascinating, will actually draw people somehow. And this is, you know, from I wish I could have known this when I was your age, Ethan. You will never know when that drawing power is. And oftentimes, and I think one of the most cringeworthy experiences is when people tell you that you had a good sermon and they'll cite something that you wish you had never said. Right? Yeah. So you can't get your bearings from what people are saying. You can't, you know, what some people are doing now. You know, we have a poll that you can now, or you can Yelp us, you know, if you liked what you heard here. This isn't going, we're not going to be able to use that kind of thing to know that we are leading people into the world of the fascination that leads to all flesh keeping silent. And the idea that Luke ends this passage by saying they left everything. The material world no longer had the lure that it once did. The cause of anxiety, of not having enough. Now they just left it, left everything. They were free, right? That in following Christ, they were free in a way that no amount of material wealth can free them. That this encounter with the numinous, the result of that is a freedom. And I think we can promise that, but somehow we have to rely that the Holy Spirit is going to make that promise a reality.
So often we think about the preaching task as this, you know, this persuasive effort that, you know, we have to convince people of a certain interpretation of the text, or convince people to believe. And you know, you're never going to be able to persuade people to leave everything, because it's not reasonable. It doesn't click with our mindset. But that is sort of the end, is what I think the hope is that people will see. And I don't know if you can even showing people, you know, that life can be good when there is nothing, and you have simply followed Jesus. It's very, I don't know. It's hard for people to see and believe that, but I guess that's why it's
impossible.
Right. But that's why it's the Holy Spirit.
Right, but it's still the ideal, and I like the fact that the ideal. I am confessing my guilt here. That when I would see a passage like the ideal, I would first of all see, oh, I must be doing that pretty good, and then start haranguing people for doing. That's not the passage. They freely left these things, and I think the way that the Holy Spirit will make that available. A real truth when I think for me, and this is, I'm not making it normative, it's when I suffered loss. Right. This came in and said, you know something? People freely left the thing that was forcefully taken from you, but you can have the same experience. You can experience the freedom of having lost this thing if you can recognize that dying is a way of life for those who believe in the crucifixion. Right? Paul says, to die is gain, to lose is gain, to leave everything is gain. Now, that it's hard to believe, thank goodness, or thank God that it's hard to believe. Nothing that is easy to believe is worth believing. So I like this ideal, and I like, even we know that the disciples are very flawed, but at this moment with that encounter, leaving everything made perfect sense. We're talking about an encounter with God that will eventually lead us to silence, and the psalm is filled with all sorts of talking. So, what do you do if you know that that's going to happen? The psalm makes it clear. You first of all, give thanks, right? The fact is, we don't understand the mysteries of life, but we have life. We wake up, we can taste and see, we can eat and drink. And so the psalm is saying is, yes, life is a mysterious thing. Life is uncontrollable. Life is chaotic. But here's the one thing, the thread that will tie it all together. And it happens when you gather weekly, you express your thanks and praise that all of life derives itself from God. Right? That's the one thing we need to be reminded all the time, that everything that we love and are afraid of losing was all given to us as a gift. Everything is gift. And if we can see life in that way, it leads to gratitude, praise. Now, here's what the psalmist says. That praise that we have will extend to the kings of the earth. That even those that own everything, once they start losing it, will recognize, or hopefully recognize, that with thanksgiving, that everything that they had, they weren't responsible for. Yes, if they were kings, that is important, but their glory pales. It's nothing. It is unclean when compared to the glory that Christ intends for us. So, what we should pray for, and also pray that it doesn't happen because it's devastating, that we discover our lowliness, and which will first of all be traumatic, tremendum, right? It will be fear and trembling to discover how lowly we really are, but then it becomes the starting point for seeing what God's glory is. And God's glory isn't that he wants to remain glorious. God's glory is that he wants to come down to us and lift us up. That's the glory. That's why we call the crucifixion glorious and beautiful.
Most people, though, will find that such a difficult jump to make, that to be able to give thanks in the midst of the cross. That, I mean, of course, that's sort of the usual struggle. But I personally struggle as a pastor to help people see that there can be this joy and thanksgiving and praise though we walk in the midst of trouble. And I mean, do you have anything to say to that?
That is the moment when you say nothing. That is when words no longer can do it, and all you can say is rest in the ark of the gospel. Yeah, the crucifixion feels like death, but there's something that comes afterwards. Yes, the disciples did not believe that the crucifixion was the way of life, but they eventually did. Let just shut up and let time run its course, because as the psalm says, in the midst of trouble, you preserve my life. We don't know how our lives are preserved. Trouble has a way of concentrating our mind only on the trouble. But in this passage, it says, when it's all said and done, we will come to recognize that God was there, that his love endures forever, and that he is steadfast and faithful, and he preserved my life. And if that does not happen, no one's going to believe. Right? And so the one thing I think you can say to people who are bearing their cross is, be among people that can still sing praises. Be among people who can still freely, you might not be able to give thanks for this. You might not be able to sing praises, but at least sit there and listen to others who are able to do it, and let them carry you, right? And let them remind you what the psalmist says, that God does not forsake the work of his hands. If God is the creator, it stands to reason he is going to come into his creation. The incarnation has been anticipated from the very beginning of the world, that God could not forsake the things and the beings that he loves. Right? So now that takes us into Isaiah, which is very tempting, but it's Bible study material, but it's very tempting to preach on this. Because it's such a saturated text, beginning with the fact that good King Uzziah died. That's the context, right? Mortality is a revelation. And all of us are mortal. We all say we're going to die. But when we actually experience it, it is a truth goose. It is what one recent writer called an existential slap. Which is very funny. Yes, we're mortal. We're all mortal. We're all going to die. But yet, when you experience it, an existential slap. This is what happens with Isaiah. Uzziah died, the good king. And in that time, when you suffer the effects of mortality, you desire immortality. And that desire is satisfied. The Lord high and lifted up. This is where Isaiah is in the presence of God. And his eyes are no longer looking at death, but they are drawn upward, high and lifted up. And what he sees is that above the throne are seraphim. Ah, well, weird creatures. If you want, shocking. Six wings, right? But only two of them are used for flying. Now, if I were an engineer, I would be saying, that's kind of inefficient. You don't need the other four wings. Get rid of them, right? But here, that there's more to reality than just the physical. That two of them, the seraphim covered his face, right? The wings were, they would seem to be for flying, but no. Even the seraphim cannot stand to be in the presence of God. They're like Peter. Get away from me. But then, and with two other ones, they covered their feet, right? Feet of clay. They covered their humiliation. So the whole thing is that the seraphim are an image of what we need to happen in order to be able to stand in God's presence. And this presence is not comfortable or comforting. It is terrifying, as Rudolf Otto reminded us. And when these angels do speak, they become pretty repetitious. They are actually in church. They call one to another. And people oftentimes would ask, why do we have this ridiculous liturgy where it's versicle and response, you know, calling back and forth? And all I can say is, I point to this passage and say, because that's what reality is. Reality is the lover beckoning and the beloved responding. You know, reality is cause and effect. The reality isn't just me in the center. Reality is voices calling back and forth. And here, the versicle and response is they call back to each other, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. Now, that comes as a surprise when we complain about how bad life is. And the angels are saying, even fallen life, if we could see it for what's truthfully going on, we would recognize that what is fallen is so much less significant than what is preserved. The creation is far more tremendous than we could ever see. And this is the other part of Otto's thing, that if we're attracted to the creation, how much more will we be attracted to the Creator? If we like accumulating stuff because it's pretty, how much more will it be to be in the presence of the one who created that stuff? That's what we're made for, not the stuff, but to be in relationship with the God who created all this. And all the passages say, here's what that getting into relationship entails. It entails, says, as we said with Isaiah, when he saw where he was, he says, woe is me, I am lost. For I am a man of unclean lips and dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. But my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. So, Isaiah's first response to the invitation to become holy, holy, holy is to say, no way, no way, no way, right? But then it happens that the angel, this would be terrifying actually, seeing the angel take a hot coal and then come flying with those two wings and about to put it on your lips, the most sensitive part of the body, right? Why? Because everything good is going to happen through language, right? We're going to have to clean up the language. We're going to have to now start trying to put away the lies and try as we can to speak the truth, right? And what it said is that with the, that when our lips are clean, this is, again, the whole confession, the guilt is taken away, the sin is atoned for. All of this happens in our confession of sin. So much more to say about this, but I'm not going to say it because 1 Corinthians is telling us about why the lips have to be touched. And Paul is saying here that the church should strive to be understood, that whatever speaking in tongues was, it's only worthwhile if it actually builds up, if it's language that actually leads to understanding. And we've already said that the language eventually runs out. It can't do all the work. But Paul is saying the speaking in tongues is trying to get to the end of things without going through all the stages. Yes, we would like to be in a place where that's beyond the rational, but Paul makes it very clear that the beauty of our life now is that we live in the realm of language, and that language is integrating us. These words are tying us together. And I love the image of the cross. And when you make the sign of the cross, you take a disintegrating body and you, like, you're stitching it together, you know, head to stomach and crossing the heart, and it's all being drawn together. And Paul is making it very clear that the words that are transacted in the church are stitching us together. Yes, we are unclean. Yes, we are unholy. Yes, we want Christ to leave us, but the truth is that he is here, he's here to stay, and that is what we need more than anything else, to take that which is falling apart and to bring it all together. And that the word that captures that is the word holy, and that is what God is doing in our lives.
Thank you, David and Ethan, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app, download it for free from Google Play or the App Store. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other program on our schedule, send me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. I am your host, Jamie Krieger, and I will be back next week with David and Ethan. Thank you again for listening, and stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.